want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track Open Line, Operational Excellence from Service to Delivery. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. We have just a few housekeeping items, and we'll jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, to help keep people and organizations off the rocks of potential self-destruction. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments and raising the hiring bar, and we assist sales and operations to avoid getting stuck in shallow waters so they have smooth sailing along the way. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations, and if you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track Open Line series is in response to a number of calls we've been getting from many clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen, you'll see an area that you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to you as many as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. You'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, since you'll want to share many of the ideas that you can consider and implement with your team and trusted advisors. Our special guest with us today is Ted Margeson, president of Pebble, LLC. Ted also is a longtime friend, business colleague, has over 30 years of experience in operation management and process improvement. Prior to starting Pebble, Ted worked for Ernst & Young in their manufacturing distribution practice and then headed up one of the Price Waterhouse manufacturing distribution practices on the West Coast. Ted also has extensive experience in system selection on both service side and manufacturing. He is the best that I have ever had the privilege to work with and is an amazing human being, and a business depth is beyond. And he knows the business side and he knows the system side, and he can see the full spectrum of everything going on in an operation, which is pretty unusual. I feel privileged to have Ted with us today and share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program, and the topic will be 5 key sales management tips. Rob Huff will be our speaker and guest. For your sales teams, you'll want to have them attend. It's going to be a terrific program. Ted, welcome aboard.
Thank you very much, Dana. And I'm certainly going to hire you to do our marketing literature now. Wow. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So thank you, everybody, for attending this presentation on operational excellence. We're going to be covering this topic at a fairly high level today. I'm going to zero in on a few key or critical points, but because of the time. But if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to ask them as we go along. So with that, let's just get started. We're going to cover basically what we've seen as the typical obstacles to accomplishing operational excellence, and then we'll get into what we believe should be the guiding focus and approach for operational improvements to achieve operational excellence. And we'll use some real-life examples to demonstrate how that approach would be used. So let's get started. There are 3 basic problems that we see when we're out at a lot of companies. Most companies take a four-wall approach. When they're looking at their processes, they're looking at what can we do within our company, within our four walls, to make improvements on how our processes are performing. So they're treating as given what's happening on the customer side and the supplier side, and typically they're making assumptions about what's important to the customers and how they operate, and the same on the supplier side. And a lot of times, unfortunately, those assumptions don't actually mesh with reality. They turn out to be different than what's really important and how these companies really operate. And sometimes the disparity is exceedingly great and even dangerous, as we're going to see in some of the examples. The other issue that we encounter all the time is an accountability issue. Lots of companies, everybody feels, hey, accountability is not a problem. Nine times out of ten, if things aren't going the way they're supposed to be going and people aren't getting the performance that they want or the results that they want, it turns out to be an accountability issue. Even in companies that have a huge focus on TQM efforts and even Six Sigma black belt people in there, oftentimes with all the plans that have been done, all the process mapping, everything that gets done, things aren't working, it turns out to be an accountability problem. We're going to cover that in more detail towards the end of the presentation. What we see as being the focus that companies should have, basically in operational excellence, the objective is to deliver the right results in a timely and cost-effective manner. If things are coming at you, left field kind of thing, if you're on the receiving end, oh, here comes an order for 200, oh, now I got an order for 25,000, now another order for this, or I've got to meet this deadline, oh, now I've got another deadline I've got to meet. If those things are kind of, if you're in react mode all the time, it's hard to get good control over what you're doing and deliver those results effectively. So better predictability gives you better control. And better predictability requires better visibility. So we recommend that you look at the entire supply chain and try and get a handle on how to improve predictability about what's happening upstream as well as the downstream side on the supply chain. And the way to do that is when you're looking at the processes that are going on, you're mapping the decision points. So where are decisions being made? And so in each of these places, here's where a decision's getting made. Well, what decision is being made? Who makes it? What's just driving their decision-making efforts? And most importantly, what are they measured on and what's a win for them? Now, this is really critical because this is probably one of the most important concepts behind this approach to operational excellence. The whole idea is you want to do the right result is delivering what is a win for them. If you're saying, like in a lot of companies, what we're supposed to do is the customer orders this, I deliver that. They want this audit service or this service. As long as I deliver that, I'm delivering what I'm supposed to deliver. Nine times out of ten, that's not the right delivery. The delivery is what's the solution. So the customer's often looking for a solution, not necessarily the product or the service per se. On the other side, when we come in and talk to companies, what they're doing is they're looking at their operations and making improvements. So maybe it's quick changeovers. Maybe it's streamlining certain processes. But often they have a lot of efforts going on in these areas. And when we say, well, okay, how do those tie into your business goals? It's not always clear how they're going to help them grow the business, save a particular customer, or whatever it is that they need to achieve. These, in effect, these are more bottom-up approaches. We recommend more of a top-down approach to making operational improvements to get operational excellence. In other words, if you want to grow the business 20%, what is it going to take to do that? Where do you expect those sales to come from? Which group of customers? Why are they going to buy? What are the processes you need to have in place to get that growth, to get those sales from the customers? So that's more of a top-down approach is what we're recommending for deploying this effort.
Ted, a question just came in. Is there another term for supply chain for service companies?
Good question. Supply chain actually does also apply to service companies. There are a number of service companies that they're not selling a product per se, providing a service, but they might have suppliers involved in doing that. And so they've got, in order to deliver their service, they've got other business partners or some vendors that they work with to deliver that. So they do have that kind of formal product or supply chain that looks like a product one. Others are just dealing directly with the customer. So the supply chain is still less, but I'm supplying this service or solution, the supplies and the results, to the customer.
Can it also be seen within a workflow system?
Yes. Oh, yes, definitely. Because if you look at a workflow system, it's basically supplying something along, the workflow is moving from one end to the other. That's a supply chain.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So let's take a look at some examples. This company provides safety gear and protective clothing. And they were having actually problems with their protective clothing when we got there. They had inventory turns and that, less than one, very little service levels, and a lot of very upset customers because of this. They've been trying for a couple of years to get things back on track. They've implemented a new ERP system. They bought a very expensive forecasting tool, but nothing seemed to be working. When I talked to the general manager, he said, well, you know, we've been selling size 10, 11 boots for a number of years. Now, all of a sudden, the customer wants size 13. If I've got large and extra large jackets in stock, they want medium and extra, extra large jackets. He says, I feel like I'm in a guessing game. While we were in the meeting, he got a call from CEO of one of their largest customers who was apparently extremely upset. Apparently, some of their employees did not have the right protective gear, and without the right protective gear, they had to shut down the production line. They're not able to work. So the production line's out of operation, and it's costing a lot of money, thousands and tens of thousands of dollars every day that line is not producing. So basically, from what I heard, the CEO of the customer is saying, in effect, either fix it this time or I'm taking my business away. And when the general manager got off the phone, he said, look, whatever we do this time, we've got to convince the customers that it's really going to work this time. So he said, that's the number one thing. We can't fail or I'm doomed. So obviously, in looking at this process, they'd been worrying about, okay, I've got a forecast based on sales that have come in. I'm looking at the orders I receive, and that's when I start responding. So he said, you're flying blind on, obviously, the customer side. What's driving them to buy from you? So we went out and interviewed the top 20 customers, and we found that what you might expect, okay, there's new hires, and then there's stuff that wears out and needs replacement. But when we looked at in more detail, the new hires, these companies were hiring people because they were putting in a new production line, they're opening a new facility, they had a new mining operation, that kind of thing. They were hiring anywhere from 30 to 300 people at a time, and obviously these were major undertakings. Somebody knew about it in advance, and they were going through some hiring processes, obviously. On the replacement side, what we found was, a particular boot might last 5 years if the person's in the warehouse, but only 3 years if somebody's using it in, like, a foundry. So we were able to determine life expectancy on these products based on the work environment and the job function that the person was performing. And we went back to the customers and we said, look, here's our plan. We'll start tracking stuff by the job function and the work environment, and if in this case it looks, you know, the item has got a life expectancy of 3 years or 36 months, we'll come along in 30 months and look to see if the product's wearing, then we'll replace it for you. And on the hiring side, we'll tie in with HR, and if you just give us the sizing information and tell us what job function the person's going to be performing in the work environment, then we can recommend the protective clothing or protective gear for the person, and which was another problem area that they'd been having. Oftentimes, the customer was not ordering the right items. Well, when we presented this to the customers, they were excited by it. Five of them said each offered to pay half the cost of the development of the system, and we said, well, let's just try and get some Excel data first or start to get going, and then we'll worry about the system later. And they all said, well, look, if you'll start doing this now, we'll give you a chance to bid on business that we have elsewhere. So, okay, well, here's what we would need from Excel. They went out and they got us all that information. And within a year, this company, which was a $200 million company, got $30 million of additional revenue from those 20 customers alone. So the key here is that helping the customers manage their decision-making process, because for those customers, what they said was, this is great. I mean, if I hire somebody, I don't have to worry about what to buy. I don't have to go research any of the items. You're going to provide that, and I don't have to worry about the person ever again, because you're going to come out automatically and do this review and replace anything that's wearing out. And so I don't have to worry at all about what's going on. You've taken that all off my my desk. This is great. Well, also for the company now, safety product company, they've got better control. They've got a lot better predictability, because on those customers, they can look out 3 years, 5 years even, and see, here's my product plan, what I've got to sell, replace, and that kind of thing. So they had much better control over their operations at that point. Let's take a look at another case.
That's great, Ted. Thank you.
This company supplies hydraulic parts, and when we met with them, they said, look, we've got to reduce our turnaround on sales orders. We were at 5 days. We got it down to 2 days. Unfortunately, inventory turns dropped to 1.2, this in an industry that was typically around 4.5. And they said, but we really feel we would have a competitive edge if we go to the same-day shipping. I was like, why? He said, well, our customers buy these parts when things break. So they're hydraulic parts. They're on production lines. They're on rides. I'm like a Disneyland? He goes, yeah, like in Disneyland. I'm thinking, well, if a part breaks and the ride stops, you don't really want to be waiting a lot of time to get a replacement part. Maybe we should be providing spares, or we can put stuff somewhere that's more accessible. Something we can do, maybe when somebody goes out and the ride breaks down, I don't know how long it takes them to communicate to purchasing to get to us. Maybe there's something we can do to reduce that, because I'm sure that's a problem for them. And so we said, okay, let's go interview the top 20 customers again to find out what drives their process and how they do their buying for these parts. Every single customer could give us at least 3 months' notice, and one could give us almost 12 months' advance notice on the requirements for their parts. And the CEO of that customer said, well, I do very large projects, and we don't need your parts until we get towards the end of the job, and that's about 12 months from when we start. You know, the sales manager said, well, then why are you only giving us 2 days' notice on our sales orders? He said, well, because that's the lead time you gave purchasing. He said, if you want, when I close the business, I can send you a Microsoft project document or something in Excel. We said, well, hey, if we get it in Excel, we can merge it with the others. That would be great. So he said, all right, let's talk to our suppliers and see if we can't get a more stable or steady stream of supply side coming in, because till that point, the supplies were coming in at any time. Nobody really knew whether the purchase order was going to get filled from that supplier in a week or 4 weeks or 2 weeks. It was all over the map. So we went to the suppliers. In particular, we started with the major supplier to cover most of the products. Now, this supplier was a multi-billion-dollar company, and this distributor was only a $20 million company. The supplier, their typical customers were in the $800 million to $5 billion range, so 100 times bigger than what this distributor was. And the distributor was kind of like, I don't know why we're talking to these people. We're certainly the small potatoes to them. You know, what would they do for us? Well, let's go ask. This isn't going to hurt. So got a hold of the VP of Ops and said, if we gave you this kind of information that, you know, lead time we're getting, would that be helpful to you? And he said, if you give me that kind of information, you can call us up to 5 p.m. Friday night our time and ask for anything that's not on that list, and it will be on the truck on Monday morning to you. You'll receive it between 9 and 9:30 Wednesday morning, along with the other stuff. And I, wow. Okay. He said, these small runs are a real pain. It's a major headache trying to schedule them in with all the bigger runs and respond quickly to these small ones. If you give me this much flexibility and time to plan my schedule, that's a major headache gone for me. And so if you're going to do that for me, he said, I can find somebody to borrow from for you to help you out when you need it. So it's kind of like, that's a major plus. Now we have a steady stream coming in. The net of it was the total cost. We're getting Excel documents, but now we're buying everything to order, and it just cost us some extra time to process some Excel and eventually move it into the ERP system. But compared to the cost of trying to get a same-day turnaround, which would have meant huge changes in the warehouse and putting in equipment to handle receipts, breaking down the stuff, repicking or packing and shipping the stuff out quickly, the inventory would have been an issue, and inventory management would have been a huge cost. So unfortunately, the first strategy was actually flying blind. They were making some assumptions. It was, well, here's our four wall. We get these orders. What can we do to speed things up within our four walls? When the reality was, what do we need to know about what's driving this thing? And maybe we can get better predictability, which we obviously did get since we were now able to buy to order and didn't have to worry about inventory turns. In the next example, this talks about we've talked about the customer side, but we're going to talk about the actual sales side, because in operations people often you're kind of on the receiving end of what sales is selling, which is a little bit unfortunate. The maxim, of course, is for companies, sell what you deliver and deliver what you sell. But unfortunately, it doesn't always work that way. Sometimes for sales, any order is a good order, unfortunately. I was the interim director of sales for a footwear company that had gone through rapid growth, so I got a chance to see some of this firsthand. We were going out on our first call to a major catalog company that was looking to carry some of their product, and we met with the buyer who had just started with that catalog company. And our sales rep is showing her some samples and asking her what she would like. And then the sales rep noticed that the buyer had white shoes on and said, well, I didn't bring that but color, but if you'd like it white, we can do that. And the buyer said, oh, okay, fine, let's do that. So we came out of the meeting, and, of course, the sales rep is ecstatic. I'm thinking, oh, God, ops is going to hate us. This is not only not our core product, but white is a real problem. We're going to have to do a special run, and it has to be white of all things. So I'm thinking, oh, they're not going to be happy campers. The sales rep went, yeah, but that's the customer wants white. I got an order here from them, a purchase order, for 3,000 pairs white. So we'll have to do it. That's what they want. I said, well, I'm not really sure. We have a meeting later with her boss. Let me ask a question. So when we got in that meeting, I said, what do you get measured on? Returns. He said, our target's 23%. If you hit 27%, you lose a page. If you hit 20%, you're a candidate for an additional page. So I said, well, our top two sellers, actually, in our company catalog business, are getting 18% returns. He said, well, then that's the two we want. And he said, if you get 18%, you're definitely getting an extra page in the catalog and possibly two. So, great. We left that meeting. Now we're selling our core product, stuff we do all the day, every day of the week. Had we gone with the white, unfortunately, our white was hitting 32% returns in our company catalog. That would have been a really short ride in that major opportunity. We would have ended up dead in the water with a lot of product that hadn't moved. But anyway, we took that concept of what do you get measured on, and we went and said, let's apply that to other customers we're dealing with. They'd just gotten into major department chains in the previous year, and so we called up the buyers and said, what do you get measured on? And so remember about what I said before about what's a win? And what do people really want? Well, of course, what they said is we get measured on inventory turns. Now, the sales rep had said, well, we don't really need to contact these buyers. They buy our product because it's great product. I mean, that's why they buy it. That's why we're doing so well. And the buyers said, no, we're looking at inventory turn numbers. The lower the turns, the less I buy. The greater the turns, the more I buy. It's that simple. So I said, all right, what we'd like to do is take out slow movers and replace them with faster moving product. Is that all right with you? Well, of course. It's a win for them. So every one of them said, oh, that's great. We said, if you can send us some inventory reports, then that would showing it turns, that would be very helpful. And they all sent us their reports that they got, copies of them. And so the best part was those reports showed us how we were performing against others in that category. So now it became really easy for a goal. Our goal was to be the best in that category in terms of turns. So a few months later, one of the salespeople came into my office and said she'd just gotten a call from a buyer who said they could no longer be our buyer. She said the buyer called her and said, hey, our CEO, who is really big on inventory turns, has noticed the improvement I've had in my turns, and I'm getting a promotion. So I can't be your buyer anymore. He said, but guess how many people would like to be your buyer? So helping those people. So the real thing is, it's not so much from an operations side, a concept of, oh, I'm delivering the product, I'm filling an order, that's the end result. The actual best end result here, the right delivery, was inventory turns for the customer. What that meant for us is we could actually manage our sell-through rates in those companies. We had better control. We took out stuff that wasn't moving, moved it through other channels, and got better sales that way. So we actually had control over the demand for our product. Just a quick example on this, too, about sales efforts, because oftentimes when I'm out at companies, they go, well, sales is what it is, sales has really good rapport with the customers. They know exactly what's happening. We'll never get blindsided. So here's a company I'm out at. They said one of our largest customers is ABC Company, and we get an order from them every Friday for 5,000. The rep talks to them every week when they getting the order, and so we know what's happening with that customer. We don't need to worry about the sales side. 3 weeks later, I'm back out there on a Friday, and that executive is in a very foul mood. Apparently, they got an order for 15,000 on Friday, not 5,000. And it turns out that their contract with that company was, you have to ship the entire order on Tuesday, and if you don't, you pay a penalty. And there was no way they were going to be able to ship the full 15,000, so they were going to end up paying a penalty. He wasn't very happy about it. Well, why 15,000 all of a sudden? He said, well, apparently they've opened some new stores and they needed the product. And he said, before you ask or say anything, no, they can't plan and build stores in less than a week. So obviously we're not asking the right questions. So again, if you don't include this, at some point something's going to come up and blindside you from an operational perspective. Now, we've talked mostly about the supply side, about the customer side. Let's talk a little bit about the supply side. Here's a high-end furniture manufacturer and custom furniture. So if the interior designer comes into their showroom and they say, well, here's our sofa, standard 60-inch, the interior designer will often go, well, we'd like to try it at 61 inches in the arrangement I have, or this customer would like it an inch higher, or the seat an inch deeper, or the back an inch higher. Any change required a quote. And these quotes had to then go out to the frame manufacturer so they could quote on every change that was done and go to the cushion stuffer and so on. So it took about 5 days to turn around these quotes and get them back. So they'd say, okay, here's what you want, and we'll go get it quoted, come back in a week. The designer would come back and go, well, I had some other ideas. What about this configuration now? And keep going like that. And so sales efforts were several weeks, many, many weeks, actually. The quote department had 11 people in it. It was only second in size to production. I mean, it was just a huge group of people managing this effort. We were helping them with a system implementation, and I noticed that every time we got a response back or a quote back from a supplier, it was a different part number. So I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, all these parts we're going to have to manage in this process in the system. This is going to be horrific. And I talked to the company, and they were like, well, this is the way it's got to be. The suppliers need to be able to see all these different configurations so they can check their costs and make sure that they're covered and they make their profit. So we're just going to have to figure out how to live with that. And I was thinking, this is so horrific for us. It's got to be painful for the suppliers, too. So I asked the project manager, I said, can you go and just call the frame manufacturer and ask them, you know, what they think of this process? He came back an hour later and said, I thought the guy was going to adopt me. He hates this process. He hates it. It's horrifying to him. He's created 18,000 part numbers in the last year for one product line alone. He's hired three people and figures he's got to hire even more people to keep up with the quotes. He said, if there's anything we can do to help, he'd like, you know, he'd love it. So we said, well, what would he like to do? So went back, talked to him, and a little while later, he came back and said, okay, here's my plan. I'm going to have three different size ranges, and there'll be a price for each size range. So any changes in this size range, here's the price. This next size range, same thing, fixed price. Anything outside of those ranges, let me know, and I'll do a custom quote. So we looked at the past 6 years of quotes. Those three price ranges with their fixed prices covered everything that had, all the quotes that had been done in the past 6 years, and then some. So it wasn't likely we were ever going to have to go out for a quote. And when we did our analysis against with the prices against the previous year's sales, we noticed that the cost of goods were down so substantially. So we went back and said to him, are you sure about your prices? He said, it costs a lot to do all this quoting. He said, I'm willing to drop my prices in order to avoid doing this ever again. And he said, and if you'll put this in place now, I'll drop my prices on all the work I'm doing right now for you 20%. Wow, that's pretty good. Let's go talk to some of the other suppliers. So I talked to the other suppliers who also hated this whole process and came to the same kind of conclusion that this person had. They would want to go fixed price. They wanted to be in the frame making business or the cushion stuffing. They didn't want to be in the quoting business. And they felt we can make our better margins on this stuff by having this than doing all this quoting. So when we put it all together, basically at that point, what we found out was we have a 14% reduction in cost of goods sold before we've even got the new system in place. The key here was, well, the other thing to consider, of course, is we don't have to do quotes. The customer comes in, or the interior designer comes into the showroom and says, I'd like it. Well, here, it's fixed price. I don't have to go get quotes from anybody. So they want to go through multiple configurations. Now the sales cycle is down to a matter of hours instead of weeks. And before, if when they would say, here it is, come back in a week, a lot of times the interior designer and the customer would go, or client would go out the door, walk down to the next showroom, and maybe buy from there. So they lost a lot of business. Now they're able to close more business and close it quicker. We've eliminated the need for all those people that were in that quoting effort and saved a horrific amount of time and effort that we were going to have to actually hire people to keep the staffing the system with all those part numbers. It was going to be horrible. So we got rid of all of that at that point. And the key here was, what we did was, what's the win for that supplier? The win for them was even probably better than what we would have predicted had we just sat within our four walls and said, well, I know they've got to do some kind of quote, so how do we streamline this whole process? These people were willing to get out of the quoting business altogether. So it was an even bigger win than we could have probably obtained had we not started with the big picture and looking at how do we help our suppliers, and that would in turn help us in some of these processes. Now, the last one I talked about was accountability. And when I mentioned about accountability before, basically, this is a problem in almost every company. And one of the companies that we were working with, really big on TQM, everybody had a 30-page small little booklet that covered on TQM and quick change, 1 minute setups and changeovers, and they were really adamant about doing that kind of thing. I mean, they were really focused on all this stuff. Six Sigma black belt people had processes mapped out, but called us in and said, okay, we got a problem which we believe has to be a system problem because we've had to do this huge write-off in inventory. So we've got like a $5 million write-off in inventory, And then 6-7 months later, we had another $6 million write-off in inventory. So there's got to be with the systems. I mean, we've got our processes really mapped out. So went in, interviewed some people on the shop floor. Whose job is it to keep this information up to date in the system? Who's accountable for it? And the net of it was nobody was accountable. What they were told was, you have to get this stuff out the door, and if you don't, you're in trouble. Just make it happen. So they were grabbing paperwork from other orders, other things like that, and just using whatever they could to get stuff out the door. Nobody was being held accountable for keeping the system accurate on this information. And so, again, accountability is a critical issue for companies. If it's used effectively, if you actually, you know, I've got to step back here because I've got to be careful. There are different levels of accountability. There's some fundamental levels of accountability which you have to have in place or things won't work. If you do a really good job and you really properly craft the accountability, you will drive operational excellence. You don't have to do anything else. You don't have to worry about anything else. That will drive operational excellence. But it has to be really well done, because if you don't have the right objectives and performance measurements in place, you'll actually drive them to do things that are not beneficial to the company, just to them, and you could cause a lot of damage. But again, if it's done properly, you never have to worry about operational excellence again. So it's that powerful.
So Ted, for could you give an example of, let's say there's field people, they're servicing, or maybe even making deliveries or something where there's point of contact with the client, and they are things are falling through the cracks, but maybe they're not giving proper feedback, or maybe no one's even aware of things are taking place because there's no reporting of information or wouldn't even know what to report back.
Okay, so and probably the easiest way to answer this is just, you know, more about what accountability entails.
Okay.
Because that's sort of generic, sort of specific, so I'd have to get more specific to come up with a,
Okay.
But when you're dealing with accountability, it's, okay, what do I want to accomplish here? So what is it that we're trying to measure? Is it, you know, getting on-time, you know, delivery or on-site? So maybe I'm having trouble with my, you know, I've got a commitment to the customer to be on-site in 24 hours if people aren't. Or maybe I've got a problem with people troubleshooting things out there, and they're not able to, you know, fix it correctly. So it depends on what the issue is. But so what is it that these people are going to be held accountable for from the, you know, their work perspective? Obviously, you want the, you know, here the objective of the work. They have to deliver the results that you want delivered in a timely and cost-effective manner. So you have to figure out, what results do I want them to deliver? You can't have shared ownership on accountability. So, for example, you can't say, well, these two people are accountable for inventory accuracy in our company. It has to be more specific. This person handles this group of items. This person handles this group. If you can't say, well, these people are responsible for, you know, in a particular call, of getting there on time. No, if the dispatcher's job is they have to notify somebody within a period of time and the other person has to respond, you have to break it out so you don't have shared or overlapping accountability, because then nothing works.
Gotcha.
The other thing is the span of control on accountability. And I'll better speed this up. But, for example, you can't say somebody's accountable where I've seen it. Oh, Frank's accountable for inventory turns. You go to Frank and Frank goes, well, I don't manage sales efforts, so if they sell something, I'm kind of out of the loop on that. I can't control them. The sales are doing the forecasting. I'm just doing the purchasing. So unless they've got the whole picture, you can't hold them accountable for it. The other thing that's important is performance measurements. What are you going to measure them on? Because if you don't measure them on something that's specific to the accountability, of course, they're going to go with, what am I measured on? If I'm measured on just showing up to work or being pleasant, if that's what is, then I can't, you know, nobody's really accountable for their side. If they get yelled at, so that's, now we're into the reward recognition system, if they get yelled at for not making shipments, but not yelled at whether or not they don't put in the right paperwork, then they're going to do, hey, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get the shipments, to hell with the paperwork. So you have to make sure that you got your performance measurements aligned with whatever you want the objectives or the end result to be, and you have to have your reward recognition system in place to reinforce that. Okay?
Okay.
Now, just quickly then, one thing everybody tells me, accountability is not an issue, which I mentioned before, and yet here's an example. I show up at a company that wants to do a system selection, and the CEO says, Ted, this is my first meeting with him. Really concerned, you know, we're looking at SAP. I've got clients or customers that got SAP. Oh, it's a nightmare, and so I'm really concerned about system implementations because I hear so many horror stories. So I want to know what kind of things can go wrong in putting in new systems. He said, well, one of the biggest problems we see is accountability. Somebody doesn't have inventory accuracy before or some problems before they go live, and those problems exist afterwards, or they're even worse because nobody's accountable for getting the results, period. They just thought the system was going to fix it. He said, well, that's not a problem for us. We're really lean. Everybody knows what they're accountable for. I said, but okay, go ahead and give me an example. I said, well, not that this applies to you, but like that inventory accuracy. Sometimes, you know, they don't have inventory accuracy. They put in the system, it's still not accurate, and it turns out there's nobody accountable for inventory accuracy. I said, well, that's not a problem here. He turned to the president. He said, David, tell Ted who's accountable for inventory accuracy. And David goes, no one, which is maybe that's why we've got that $14 million inventory discrepancy. I'm thinking, I can't believe it. This is my first meeting, and accountability is an issue. So the key there is, for a lot of companies, when they feel that they have accountability, you know, well handled, it's a people kind of issue, and a lot of companies, they don't have that handled as well as they think they do. They've just said, you're in charge of purchasing, and they thought that covered accountability. It's more than that. And so this is an area where there's a lot of sort of people not going down to the right level of detail. It's sort of an oversight on parts of managing that whole area of performance. But you can't have excellence without effective accountability.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So in summary here, the key here is you, one, have to look at the big picture. You can't just go the four walls. You need to look at the decision points and find the blind spots. And by blind spots, that means where is it I'm making an assumption? I don't know something. And then you have to, let's go find out what's really happening in those areas. And so we do improve our predictability by improving visibility on what's going on. And the other part behind this is I need to deliver the win, the right results that we're delivering. Not necessarily the product. So what operational excellence really requires is I've got to deliver a win. That's the right result. So my customer has to get a win, which means I have to understand what is a win for them, provide that solution to them.
And that can be done through some type of surveys, possibly. What would a win be, or making telephone calls to see what the win would be?
Yeah, excellent question. When we went and interviewed the customer, what we found is if you group the customers and the suppliers by type, you'll find, okay, there's different types of customers. What we found was the same themes kept popping up, like, for example, the inventory turns. When we called that first buyer at the department store, what do you measure on inventory turns? Every other department store across the U.S., every other department, major department chain across the U.S., same answer, same exact answer we got. So you don't need to survey everybody. A few people will give you the big picture.
Okay.
And again, if you're starting with, you know, the big, the top-down approach, you can want to start with an effort. Let me start with some of my bigger customers. So where, you know, it's that 80-20 thing or 70-30 for retail in some cases and others. I'm going to start with a few of the customers in the area that will drive a large part of my business. And so I can take a few customers and actually get to know them really well, my A customers, my core customers, get to know them really well. I make some assumptions about B and then C-size accounts from that, and you've got a much better handle on your business and predictability.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Yep. No, that's very helpful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good. And then, of course, at the last part here, as we said just in the previous slide, is – address accountability. Make sure that as you go through this, you understand what each person in your organization from an operations side is accountable for. Same is beneficial if you can get the sales side to do that too and make sure that everybody's on the same page from that perspective.
It's shocking, too, that sometimes when getting people into a team meeting or something, there's certain assumptions managers or supervisors will make on accountability, and you put people in the same room, and you realize, wait, I thought they were doing this and that, and they were doing this and that, and there was a handoff. And it's amazing, even after years of assumptions or thinking things were worked out, things change. So isn't it a constant check-in?
It's a fairly constant check-in as the company grows and people come on board. So the interesting thing is I've been in like a $5 million company that maybe had 30 employees, and you're right about the assumptions. 20, 30 employees, and already somebody's assuming about who's doing what and who's accountable for something. So it's a problem even in smaller companies, and certainly it grows as the companies grow. Somebody once told me, Ted, if I could make money betting people on accountability, I'd be rich. He said, 99% of the time, he said, this is better than Vegas. I could walk into a company and go, you have an accountability problem, just walk in the door and bet them that I was right. And he said, 99% of the time, I'd make the bet.
Interesting. And most people are in the assumption they're doing a great job. It just may not, either it's redefined or maybe not defined clearly enough.
Everybody is adamant that the accountability is not an issue when we first get there. That's never a problem, never an issue. And after you get through all the rest of the stuff, lo and behold, somebody's not accountable, or they're not being held accountable, or it's not clear who's really accountable.
Interesting.
And to my point about driving the change, and so there's one last thing in accountability. There's one company that said, okay, Ted, we want to get a new system, but our warehouse manager fights us every step of the way. It's a pain. He hates change. He isn't going to change. he just hates the systems. He'll make it fail. Oh, that's really weird. So one of the things we're having a problem with, of course, in that company was inventory accuracy. Went and talked to him, and he said, I'm not being held accountable for inventory accuracy. I don't need a new system at all, because people just come in and help themselves to inventory. I can't really manage this kind of thing, and so nothing's going to help me. He was very frustrated. We said, well, suppose we wall off it. Nobody can come in here unless they've got a key. Only your people can. He said, well, that would be good. And I said, then, only you and your people would be able to touch the inventory. I said, well, of course, we got to do cycle counts, so accounting's going to want to come down and make sure that the inventory is accurate. He goes, well, I'd like some tools so that I can do some spot checks on stuff. I said, well, the new system has that kind of thing. He says, well, how soon can we get the new system in? So the interesting thing is, if you do this properly, you can actually change the way in which people are approaching the job, and you can drive them to want to do those kind of things. But that's then we're holding somebody accountable for that and giving them the tools. So.
Interesting. Okay. That's helpful.
Thank
you. Let's go to the last slide.
Okay.
In just a few minutes, like 2 minutes after we conclude this show and I turn off the recording equipment, we're going to open up the line. So if you'll have an opportunity to talk with Ted directly. You'll see in your screen area to register for our upcoming June 23rd open line program, which is entitled 5 Key Sales Management Tips. Please sign up today, reserve a space for yourself, and let us know if you'd like your staff or other colleagues to attend. And in the next few days, you'll also be receiving a recording and PowerPoint for attending today's program. And so please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Ted and I want to thank you for your time and for all the valuable ideas that Ted shared today. If you'd like to contact Ted to further discuss any of the specifics about your industry, your team, or to have some one-to-one time together, or to discuss any of the ideas shared today, you'll see Ted's contact information on the screen. The information shared today is the property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in Santa Monica, California. And our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, just let us know. I want to thank you so much for joining us, and we're looking forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track Open Line program. Have a great day. Now hold the line. Let me just turn the recording equipment off, and I'll open up the line. We'll talk with Ted then. Hold on 1 second.